Later, he told me he'd been afraid to show me the painting. He thought I wouldn't like the way he portrayed me, dragging myself across the field, fingers clutching dirt, my legs twisted behind. The arid moonscape of wheatgrass and timothy. That dilapidated house in the distance, looming up like a secret that wouldn't stay hidden. Faraway windows, opaque and unreadable, ruts in the spiky grass, made by an invisible vehicle, leading nowhere. Dishwater sky. People think the painting is a portrait, but it isn't, not really. He wasn't even in the field. He conjured it up from a room in the house. An entirely different angle. He removed rocks and trees and outbuildings. The scale of the barn is wrong. And I am not that frail young thing, but a middle-aged spinster. It's not my body, really, and maybe not even my head. He did get one thing right. Sometimes a sanctuary, sometimes a prison. That house on the hill has always been my home. I spent my life yearning toward it, wanting to escape it, paralyzed by its hold on me. There are many ways to be crippled, I've learned over the years, many forms of paralysis. My ancestors fled to Maine from Salem, but like anyone who tries to run away from the past, they brought it with them. Something inexorable seeds itself in the place of your origin. You can never escape the bonds of family history, no matter how far you travel. And the skeleton of a house can carry in its bones the marrow of all that is yet to come. "Who are you, Christina Olson?" he asked me once. Nobody had ever asked me that. I had to think about it for a while. "If you really want to know me," I said, "we'll have to start with the witches, and then the drowned boys. The shells from the distant lands, a whole room full of them. The Swedish sailor marooned in ice. I will need to tell you about the false smiles of the Harvard man and the hand-wringing of those brilliant Boston doctors. The dory and the haymo, and the wheelchair in the sea. And eventually, though neither of us knew it yet, we'd end up here, in this place, within and without the world of the painting." Those moving words are from the prologue to A Piece of the World by Christina Baker Klein. I'll open my review by asking, have you ever been to Maine? In particular, to down east Maine along the Rocky Coast. Well, if you have, today's book is likely to bring back memories. If you haven't, today's book is so well crafted, its prose will take you there through words. Here's our story. Christina's family had long ago, centuries ago, fled the ravages of the witch trials of colonial Massachusetts, moving to the rocky coastline of Maine to start a new life away from their sordid involvement in the death of those misunderstood women. But the curse of those witches from the past that was cast into the lives of family in retribution seems to live on. Her ancestors had long ago changed their last name. They were originally called the Hawthorns, and more recently had tried to shed their past by bringing in an immigrant seafarer as the family patriarch when the original family name had daughtered out. But the Olsons we meet in our story still cannot make a thriving farm or a life on the Maine seacoast, no matter how they try. So it is we come down to this bedraggled cast of characters who populate the main story of our novel, the stubborn, quiet Christina Olson, her body ravaged since her childhood by a disabling muscular disease. Her brother, Al Olson, caretaker of the family's inherited farm in a large, rambling, family-built house, which has not seen a coat of paint forever, whose second floor is now all but abandoned, the surrounding land offering the two remaining Olsons subsistence farming sufficient to keep the two spinsters alive, but little else. Through our story, men and boys, boys and girls, have come and gone in Christina's and Al's lives. It has been so since their youth, when their parents, their grandmother, and their siblings kept the large farmhouse a hubbub of farm life. But now, it is the intrusion one fine summer's day, for that is how it seems, of a want-to-be artist that shakes up both Al's and Christina's world and sets them and us on a cascade of memories that tell the fictional story behind the famed painting of that young girl grouping through the golden grass to the old ramshackle farmhouse on the hill, the famed Christina's World of Andrew Wyeth. Reading this story, I dare say you'll feel inspired to create art yourself. Klein's descriptions of artist Andrew Wyeth's sketching, sketch after sketch, from this perspective, then that, from inside the big old farmhouse, from outside the house, among the grasses. The descriptions so well told of the young Wyeth carefully cracking fresh eggs from the farm's hens, his careful separation of the yolk, and adding of pigments for his paints. All of that alone is reason to invite the reader to create, I think. And of course, there's a temptation to make one's own baskets. There's all that grass. To engage in storytelling about one's own family, the urge to perhaps pull out the now dusty sewing machine and create a new outfit, a dress, a skirt. Self-sufficiency was the daily life of Christina and her family. Perhaps it can still be infectious for those of us with time to spend on such practical crafts today. In many ways, big and small, daily and suddenly emotive, Christina herself has taken up the solitary yet creative life of her favorite poet, Emily Dickinson. She lives a quiet life, but through her life, great art is produced. The visiting artist, Andy Wyeth, at one point tells the taciturn and self-effacing Christina that she holds within her the heart and the spirit of an artist. Perhaps we will discover that lurking in our inner lives as well. Well, to Klein's great credit, these characters, drawn from real life, are characters that grab our attention. Certainly it is so with Christina, the oftentimes narrator, with her daily struggles caused by and sometimes encouraged by how she deals with her handicapped body. Her sporadic efforts to engage with a larger world as a young girl and young woman, her gradual decline into wretched domesticity and quietude as she ages, all but alone on that godforsaken farm. Christina's relationship with her grandmother, Mammy. We meet the old woman when Christina remembers her days living on the farm as a child. Warmed by memories of Mammy's own younger life, which was filled with travel and adventure, she literally traveled the world with her seafaring husband and young children. In bittersweet prose, Christina takes the time to tell us about the now past Mammy. The older woman is given up on her own daughter ever continuing to explore the larger world, but has real hopes for her Christina, her granddaughter. For all her reticence, may still take up Mammy's own fascination with travel, with adventure. It is Mammy who encourages Christina to mingle, to at least just get out of the house and go to a dance at the local Grange Hall. When Mammy dies one winter, Christina is left, now a young woman on the forsaken farm, with her now taciturn mother and quiet father, and she watches as her brothers, one by one, leave to travel the sea, leaving her at home to wander the world only through the many seashells that Mammy had collected in her travels and left in the shell room of the house as distant memories of sunny, warm beaches and ocean waters. Christina's brother, Al, like the other young men in his family, is enamored of the sea, but chooses to stay at the house on the cove with his sister, both unmarried, caring for the family farm they have inherited. Yes, Al is happy to go into town now and then, and while his excursions into the sea take him out a few miles to fish, to lobster, he always returns to the farm, to his sister. The great love of Christina's life, for yes, there is definitely romance in A Piece of the World. Well, he falls into Christina's life one fair June day, in the form of the Harvard-bound Walton, on a summer vacation away from the city with his family. Walton was handicapped for a time as a child himself, becomes the imperfect man who comes to Christina's door, sweeps her off her feet, as life will so often have it. Christina's father had fallen into her mother's life one frozen winter's day to stay on as the pater familias, as Christina reflects. She had hoped that Walton would be the same for her. He is to become the great love and the great irony of Christina's life, as he offers her companionship and a glimpse of the vast world of knowledge awaiting outside the farm. But in the end, her dreams or love are to be naught, and Walton slowly, over the course of his fall, winter, spring, a attending college at Harvard, slowly withdraws from Christina's life, never to return for their summers of mutual joy exploring the caves, the coves, the wonders of downeast Maine. But it is the soon-to-be world-famous Andrew Wyeth who justly takes center stage with Christina in this tale. The still young Andrew Wyeth is introduced on the farm that he comes to love, to sketch, to paint, through the devices of Christina's childhood friend Betsy, the girlfriend, then wife, of the still-struggling artist. As sometimes narrator of the story of himself, Wyeth shows up one summer day and becomes infatuated by the house on the bay, by Christina and her brother, who still live there. Wyeth is painted in words by Klinis Shai, passionate about his painting, but slow to create. A man withdrawn from society at large, Christina's quiet fascination with the artist begins with a tentative query about his solitary sketching habits, and ends with the two of them forming an odd sort of almost romantically fused bond, which brings both Christina, her brother Al, and their rundown farm to the attention of art lovers now and then. As our author quotes Andrew Wyeth at the front of the book, quote, "There was a very strange connection, one of those odd collisions that happened. We were a little alike. I was an unhealthy child that was kept at home. So there was an unsaid feeling between us that was wonderful, an utter naturalness. We'd sit for hours and not say a word. And then she'd say something, and I'd answer her. A reporter once asked her what we talked about. She said, nothing foolish," end quote. Yes, life is slower here. Life is simpler, and its offerings perhaps, but importantly, not smaller for at least some of the residents' dreams and hopes. And always there is the sea brushing up against their farm near Cushing, Maine, the sea to which almost all the young men in Christina's life take, including her beloved nephew John, who embarks into a life as a Navy sailor during World War II. The sea and Christina's remaining brother Al with his fishing. The sea and the grasses for the artist Andrew Wyeth. If I've painted a story of isolation, of quiet yearning by characters whose depth of thought and emotion is rare to surface, but bubbles along underneath nonetheless, then I've done my job. A Piece of the World by Christina Baker Klein is the best of fictional historical memoir. Memorable characters, well-scripted place and times, beautiful and at times achingly written prose. Do give it a try. Let me finish by reading just a little bit more from the book. This prose is just delightful to read. This is Christina speaking with us. "I read once that the act of observing changes the nature of what is observed. This is certainly true for Al and me. We are more attuned to the beauty of this old house with its familiar corners when Andy is here. More appreciative of the view down the yellow fields to the water, constant and yet ever-changing, the black crows on the barn roof, a hawk circling overhead, a grain pail, a dented pail, a rope hanging from a rafter. These ordinary objects and implements are transformed by Andy's brush into something timeless and otherworldly. Sitting at the kitchen window early one morning, I noticed that the sweet peas I planted years ago have flourished beyond all reason in their sunny spot beside the back door. Taking a paring knife from the utility drawer and a straw basket from the counter, I make my way to the vine and clip the fragrant blossoms, cream and pink and salmon, letting them tumble into the basket. In the pantry, I take mother's tiny dust-covered crystal vases from a high shelf and wash them in the sink, then fill them with sprigs. I find spots for the vases all over the ground floor, on the kitchen counter, the mantel in the shell room, a windowsill in the dining room, even in the four-hole privy in the shed. I set the last vase at the foot of the stairs for Andy to take upstairs. When he shows up several hours later, I hold my breath as he steps into the hall. What's this? He exclaims. How glorious! As he trudges up the stairs, he calls, It's going to be a good day, Christina. a very good day indeed. From A Piece of the World by Christina Baker Klein. I hope you'll enjoy this book as much as I did. I had the opportunity to share this book to lead a discussion with the Art League of Greater Lafayette not that long ago. We all had a great time discussing it. I think you will enjoy this too. A Piece of the World. It's available at the West Lafayette Public Library as well as all of our other fine local libraries.